And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, we're at the final stretch of this election cycle. And I guess the big event in Pennsylvania last week for Pennsylvania voters was the debate between Oz and Fetterman. Did you happen to take part in that debate?
I did not take part. I've been parts of debates before, not that one. It was a hard debate to watch from a Fetterman side. No one knew exactly what to expect. I mean, Fetterman, I knew what his condition was because my mother had had a stroke and suffered from aphasia, and where she knew everything that was going on. She understood everything. She could think. She just couldn't grasp the words at times to express herself. Fetterman was, I thought, having a much tougher time retrieving things. It seemed like he had memorized certain points, but had and then couldn't recall what he wanted to say after he'd memorized them. And it was not a great performance on his behalf. Whether it means anything or not, we'll have to see. Chuck Schumer let loose that on a hot mic that didn't seem to, quote unquote, hurt that much. Oz has been gradually gaining ground over the past number of weeks as Republicans have come home. There was one poll that was released that said Oz was actually now ahead, but there was questions about it. We really don't know what's happening there in that race. What I'm hearing from my people in Harrisburg, who are close to the political scene, say that Shapiro is running well ahead and a very good campaign, but after him there's a huge drop-off for everybody else on the ticket, or not necessarily huge, but significant enough by 2, 3, 4, 5 points that can make a difference. So we'll have to see. Oz, you know, he had a couple of blunders. He got kind of smarmy there, took a shot at Fetterman's memory and processing. And then he had that quote that's already turned into ads I've seen in the Philadelphia area about that a woman, that when he'd consider abortion, it should be a woman, her doctor, and local politicians, which is really... an interesting take. You know, Dr. Oz, when you were having heart surgery, what local politicians did you consult before you cut into the chest?
Could there be any people stupider in politics than the local politicians?
Oh, what was Mark Twain's line there about?
His line was about corrupt politics. He said, God never created any criminal race except congressmen.
He had that one, but I thought he had another one there about, but I repeat myself or something like that. Oz has had some blunders. Actually, I thought he had another blunder, but the Democrats are not running on the economic issue, so they're just now trying to pivot. When he wouldn't endorse the any raise in the minimum wage. He kept saying, well, that's up to the market to take care of, and most places are already paying more than that. But that was something that could be exploited, because that's the Republican viewpoint. Keep wages down so you can keep profits high.
Well, that's where the American Republicans mirror the British Tories, who lost their last prime minister in 2 weeks because of that attitude toward wages.
We were over in England when that happened, and it's, of course, and look who they replaced her the richest man ever to be prime minister. He's worth something like $800 million, a Goldman Sachs guy. He's kind of like Oz, because a lot of his wealth comes from his wife's family.
Not a lot, all. Her stake in his wife's, in her family's company is worth just about £790 million.
That's a nice little chunk
of
change. It is. It is. Of course, we have some other politicians, like Mitch McConnell's wife's family has a lot of money in the shipping business.
Yes. But it's not $800 million.
It's not $800 million, but it's significant. It's significant. You know, as long as we're talking about politicians' families, we had that incident this week. I want to get back to the races, but that incident on Friday where Nancy Pelosi's husband was violently attacked in their home with a guy who apparently was looking for the Speaker of the House herself.
Well, it was his friend, Nancy.
Yeah.
He said, I'm waiting for Nancy.
Yeah. Where's Nancy?
Yeah.
Where's Nancy? I mean, these guys were all never the brightest in the world. Like, he didn't think that maybe he should be in Washington, D.C. Didn't bother to check on these things.
That's who gets motivated by the atmosphere that these right-wingers have created. Nutty people.
Yeah, that was what happened down at the pizza parlor in Washington.
That's right.
Where this guy drove from North Carolina and burst in there with a shotgun to rescue all these kids down in the basement.
Which basement didn't exist, let alone the kids.
Right next to Politics and Prose, the bookstore.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the little details on that.
Yeah.
You keep reading and hearing this stuff. We had that the candidate running against Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan came out with some wild stuff again this week, more QAnon type of things, and it doesn't seem to hurt them. That's the interesting part, it's the depressing part. But we have such a large group of people that are locked in to this messaging that goes on and that triggers them.
But it shouldn't surprise you. I mean, this has happened in country after country throughout the whole of the 20th century. Demagogues are able to create public opinion in their favor.
Yeah. Well, you know,
that was Goebbels' whole point. Repeat the big lie often enough, people will believe it.
Right.
The more outrageous the lie, the more people will believe it, because how could it not be true?
Yeah, and they never back off. They always double down on it.
Right.
I keep going back to Margaret Chase Smith's admonition about that she was worried the Republican Party might be the party that just becomes one of fear and smear and the four horsemen of calumny, as she called it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's become. That's what it is, and it keeps working for them. The Willie Horton type ads and things like that. You see the ads in Pennsylvania all over about crime. You know, showing all this stuff, like Josh Shapiro didn't do anything about this, as if the state attorney general is in charge of the local police departments or the local prosecutors. They're not. But,
the real truth is that crime in red states or areas ruled by Republican administrations is higher than crime rates in areas ruled by Democratic Party administrations.
Yeah, but the Democrats never point this out.
They never point this out. That's right.
Well,
you can't fault the Republicans for succeeding with their propaganda if there's nothing countering their propaganda. After all, their job is to make their propaganda.
So yeah.
The fact that what they say is false, the fact that what they say is awful, the fact that what they say is against the best interests of I would say 90% of the American people. But that's their point of view. Mm-hmm. It's up to the 90% of the American people to have a leadership that can, you know, that combats that effectively. The Democrats, to the extent they combat it, don't really do it effectively. At least not that I can see.
No, it's that old story again. The problem now is that the stakes keep getting higher and higher. Because you have a Republican Party that is radicalized. They have less what I would call adults in the room rather than these crazies in the room.
I'm not so sure they're crazy. I think that what they are is very faithful repeaters of the point of view that benefits certain sectors of corporate America, the corporations, certain sectors of the corporate America. For example, the oil and gas industry. Now, the Biden administration makes a big point about the agreement of OPEC to cut production is terrible, awful. Meanwhile, there was a conference in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia, attended by thousands of businessmen this week. The American businessmen, oil industry people, all said the Saudis were right. Biden's wrong. So that's what they should do.
Yeah, because, and that's the big difference. That's why you don't have, you shouldn't be running government like a business, because business is a profit motive thing, and government is something that has to benefit the people and not necessarily be for profit.
Not necessary, but there's no way to make a profit in government. The whole point is government exists to regulate society, to make sure that we don't have civil war, right? That's fundamentally what a government exists for, to maintain that you have antagonistic interests in society. Somehow there has to be some regulation, that they don't fight each other, that they come to some modus vivendi, and life goes on. Otherwise, you have a life of vengeance only.
Yeah, well, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare.
Yeah.
The things listed in the preamble to the Constitution.
But these right-wingers don't agree with that.
No. And that's pretty much the danger that we see. Now, that's why you get things Peter Thiel, who's out there, says doesn't believe he doesn't think democracy and freedom are compatible.
It could be the democracy and his freedom are not compatible, because his freedom is the freedom to oppress the people who benefit from democracy. Right? That's what he does.
Yeah.
That's how he makes his money.
Yeah. Exploitation.
Yeah. And there's an international movement. I mean, it's not just the maggots in America. You know, Putin made an important speech this last week. And one of the things he pointed out was, and I think he built a speech around it, that there's an international movement that he's part of, that he wants to lead, that exists in order to challenge the American government. And think about it. Putin administration, Orban's administration in Hungary, the current prime minister's fascist party in Italy, Marine Le Pen's party in France, the second largest party in France now. The Modi's government in India, the Polish government, the Burmese fascist government, Bolsonaro in Brazil. This is a coordinated movement with a common religious nationalist agenda. Now, the religions differ. In one place is Christian, one place is Hindu, but all of them privilege religion over secular values. And that's the society they're trying to build. Autocracy is common to all of it. And it is an international movement, and we see it here in the Republican Party.
Well, we've seen it in Pennsylvania with Mastriano and his religious movement, Christian nationalism.
Yeah. And Lauren Bobart, wherever the hell she manages to crawl out from under the rock whenever she does that, or what's her name, Marjorie Taylor Greene. There's a whole panoply of these Christian fanatic leaders, but they, you know, they're religious government. That's what they're for. They're for the Sharia government types. That's what they're for.
Yeah, it's interesting because as they're looking at the Sharia type of government, you've got the women's protests continuing in Iran, the most serious challenge to the religious, you know, that whole thing got triggered by the religious police beating up and killing a woman because they didn't like the way she was dressed. Her scarf didn't cover enough hair or something like that. And, you know, it was curious that, you know, when you mentioned Putin, that Meloni in Italy, this right after she got sworn in as the prime minister, said that she was sending howitzers to Ukraine, which is, I'm sure, did not please Mr. Putin very much. But we'll see, you know, whether it was a token gesture or whether it was something more substantive. A lot of this, you know, you wonder how it can take hold. A lot of this, of course, came with the advent of social media, the breakdown of local journalism, and this overall means of communication. Tom Friedman called the world is flat, but he's finding out that the flatness of the world contains a lot of dangers in the way that these bad ideas are communicated repeatedly. We have Elon Musk, another autocratic business leader, taking over Twitter and going to decide what's going to be open and what isn't going to be open for commentary on there. I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of blundering before there's any straightening out of the thing. And I don't know if you noticed, you know, in terms of Facebook or now called Meta this week, that one day it lost about 25% of its value. You know, Zuckerberg, who's been criticized, another autocrat in the head of a company who really doesn't, I don't think, really cares about public policy. It's only about the bottom line.
But why should he care about public policy? He's a businessman. He's supposed to care about the bottom line.
Right. He's supposed to care about the bottom line.
Yeah.
But the business of government is to set parameters in terms of how you can function in order to have that bottom line. You know, antitrust is a big issue. We saw a couple of weeks ago that Albertsons were they buying out or being bought out?
They're going to merge with the Kroger.
Kroger, yeah. Right. And what that will do in terms of being able to set prices, costing of jobs. I mean, we're back a lot into where the 1980s, when we had all these mergers and acquisitions and a lot of people lost jobs. The only thing right now, of course, is that the companies need employees. There's not enough people to fill all the jobs that are out there. So the deleterious effects are somewhat muted at this point, but you know, it'll be interesting to see whether that merger goes through or it doesn't go through, and what kind of signals that is. It's going to be interesting to see what happens when if Trump goes back onto Twitter, although he says he isn't, he's going to stay with Truth Social. If that company actually is able to get its financing together and stay alive, we don't know.
And if the promoters stay out of jail.
Yeah.
Since they're all being accused quite credibly of violating the Securities and Exchange Act and, you know, scamming the public.
Yeah, well, what were these? They did it through a SPAC or something like that, special.
They did it through a SPAC, and they violated almost all of the rules that govern SPACs, because why should the rules apply to Donald Trump?
Yeah. Well, we're finding out in his situation. There was a ruling this week that he has to turn over his income tax records to Congress. I guess he's going to try to delay that until the new Congress comes in, so that they'll say never mind to that. The trial. I haven't heard much about the trial in New York. I think it got delayed a little bit, didn't it, for his organization?
That's underway. They're choosing the jury, right?
Yeah, they're having a problem picking the jury, I guess.
Well, they can't find New Yorkers who don't hate him.
Which is going to be interesting. I mean, how else are you going to do this? They're going to have to find.
But look,
who knows?
I don't know how you do that. That's that problem. But that's the jury problem, right? I mean, talking about Mark Twain, he pointed out that the American judicial system is based on the existence of a large number of stupid, ignorant people, because you need people who have never heard of the people involved or the issue under discussion. Well, if you have an important issue, the only people who don't know about it are the people who have absented themselves from social life. That's a hell of a way to rely on justice.
You know, originally it was just the opposite when you picked a jury. You know, in England, they used to pick people who knew everybody in the case.
Yeah.
But that only goes so far if you live in a small village.
Yeah.
It doesn't work in a large society.
But listen, you're talking about getting back to Twitter. You don't see how a businessman like Musk can or should be able to act as the leader, as the moderator of free speech, of a free speech platform, because his concern is profitability, as is the concern of the leader of any business, profitability. And that's a good point. But you extend that point, let's say, to healthcare. When healthcare is in the hands of people who don't care about your health but care about how much money they can make off your illness, why is that good? Hard to see. To me, I can't see it.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the great misnomers right now in healthcare is nonprofit. I don't. You know, I've often told the story about going to Pittsburgh when my children are looking at colleges, and going downtown, and the two largest buildings in Pittsburgh were no longer U.S. Steel or Alcoa or PPG, all those behemoths of industry, but were UPMC, University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, and Highmark Blue Shield. You know, and both of them are listed as nonprofits, but they have an awful lot of money floating around. Geisinger, if you see the way they build their buildings and how much they spend, are they really nonprofits on there?
These are nonprofits whose CEOs make upwards of $500,000 a year.
That's small potatoes.
That's normal.
That's small potatoes.
Heads of Boys and Girls Clubs who make $250,000-$300,000 a year. I mean, it's preposterous.
And then you have the drug companies. You know, and the price of drugs. You know, the Republicans gave the Democrats a great opening when Kevin McCarthy came out and said, "We're going to repeal the parts of the laws that the Democrats passed that allowed Medicare to negotiate drug prices and to cap the cost of medicine."
Didn't see the Democrats leap forward with outrage about that.
Why they didn't is beyond me, because they believe that
if they stick with Roe versus Wade, they win the election, and that's all they talk about basically, because they think that suburban middle class women, so called, are the key to the victory of the Democratic Party.
You should be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. You can have two messages.
You could.
There's nothing. There's nothing saying that you shouldn't be talking about these things. But they don't. It seems so obvious to people like you and me, but it's why it doesn't resonate with Democratic strategists is,
Because we think of the Democratic Party as an organized group of people who are prepared to carry out the tasks that are needed to win an election. That's why they exist. Now, I know that one of the big organizing points of the Republicans in the last few months had been to prepare challenges at the ballot, right? They're
right.
Training people to go to the polls and to challenge voters as they vote.
Right.
Now, if they do this, you're going to have thousands of challenges in many states. How are those challenges going to get settled? You think Mark Elias is going to run around to every state and handle all this? Let's say there are recounts that are needed, and you need thousands of people trained in how to do these recounts because they demand hand counts, not machine counts. The Democrats haven't mobilized anybody to do this or trained anybody to do this or have an army of people to do this, but the Republicans have. So just on the most mundane operational level, you've got one side that has an army and another side that has a debating society.
Yeah. And part of it is that there's so much money that's floating around on the Republican side. It's absolutely amazing. I've talked about this great right-wing infrastructure for a long time. And the degree of it, I just wrote another article about that for the Pennsylvania trial lawyers. We don't even begin to know how much, I used to think of it as the Heritage Foundation and Cato Institute, Manhattan Institute. But there are all these groups. If you read Ann Nelson's book, Shadow Network, you start seeing it, the things that you never heard of before. And now with Leonard Leo.
Leonard Leo has $1.5 billion to spend.
Yeah, and he got out of the Federal Society just so he could set up all these other organizations.
Yeah. Well, we're at the final stretch of this particular election.
Yeah.
I'm not sure we're at the final stretch of all elections, but it's possible. But there's a lot that we're going to learn in this election and a lot of weaknesses that are going to become apparent in this election. Whether elections are going to be meaningful or whether they're going to be contentless elections, you can have elections in form, but nothing can get decided. In Putin's Russia, there's plenty of elections, but, he picks the candidates. So you can't run if he doesn't let you run.
That's a lot like Iran.
Yes, exactly right. So elections which are the hallmark of American democracy, it may turn out, are going to be secondary. If you want to have democracy, you may have to have mass mobilizations. You may have to have an entirely different approach to how American democracy is going to look. This election will tell us a lot.
Well, that's why I keep following that Ruth Ben-Ghiat. She has her hand on the pulse of these situations.
Well, in the meanwhile, this is the final stretch. There are a couple of weeks left.
Well, about 10 days left.
Yeah. I think in Pennsylvania we've already had nearly 700,000 votes cast.
Right. And they can't be counted
until
election.
There's only 3 million people who are going to vote or who could vote. So that's a lot.
It is.
So go vote.
Yep.
Although those votes won't get counted until a week after the votes counted on election night. Don't forget that. That's the way the system works. They can't even check the envelopes to tell which ballots should be counted until after election night. And they count them a week later. So that's the system.
But on election night, they'll have an idea because they'll know roughly how many of those votes are Democratic votes and how many are Republican votes.
How will they know that?
Well, they know because they know who requested the ballots from the counties.
Right,
by registration.
But there could be a mismatch between who requested and who mailed it back.
there could, but I think generally the percentages hold.
And will they announce that? Does that get announced?
It doesn't get announced, but I think the strategists pretty well know. Like in Lackawanna or Susquehanna County, how many Democrats versus how many Republicans requested absentee ballots? They don't know which ones. But if I think they have to figure out that it would be returned probably in the same proportion. Last time, the Democrats were getting about 75% of the write-in votes.
All right. Well, that's all for tonight.
Mail-in votes, right.
That's all we've done for...
We'll see you next week.
Next week will be an interesting week because there'll be more tightening down the final stretch.
We'll be on the cusp.
On the cusp, yeah. See you next week.
See you next week.